By listening to the Conscious Fertility Podcast, you agree to not use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Consult your own physician or healthcare provider for any medical issues that you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast. Welcome to Conscious Fertility, the show that listens to all of your fertility questions so that you can move from fear and suffering to peace of mind and joy. My name is Lauren Brown. I'm a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine and a clinical hypnotherapist. I'm on a mission to explore all the paths to peak fertility and joyful living. It's time to learn how to be and receive so that you can create life on purpose. Welcome to another episode of the Conscious Fertility Podcast. I'm here today with a dentist, Dr. Katie Lee, and I am very excited for those that are looking to grow their family because she wrote a book called Saved by the Mouth. Those that are watching this on a video can see me holding up a copy of her book. I got a signed copy. And I've been aware about oral health and how it affects your health and a little bit about pregnancy health. But Katie's going to share with us ways and why it's important to know about your oral health and how it impacts your fertility. So let me introduce you to Dr. Katie Lee and the author of Saved by the Mouth. So as I mentioned, she is a dentist. She's a speaker and author and also a coach who lives in Aurora, Colorado. Dr. Lee graduated from the University of Illinois at Chicago in 2010, and she was an owner partner in over 80 DSOs. I assume those are dental type practices. Mm-hmm. Throughout the U.S., and she also served as a clinical partner overseeing 5 states. And now she consults for health technology companies and provides implant education for general dentists. And her passion really is about the oral systemic health link that comes from her own personal experience, which I hope she's going to share today. And I think it really jives with our audience and what we talk about this holistic approach and how everything you do has a systemic effect. Now, Katie, I kind of think your story is important. So I thought maybe if you could share, if you're willing to, your personal story with fertility, because you have a personal story with fertility. And also, can you tie in why you think wearing helmets when you're using four-wheel drives, ATVs is also important? Because I think that's another good message you have.
Yeah. Well, let me start with the ATV accident, since that happened first and kind of started me in dentistry. So when I was 14 years old, I grew up in the country, so I grew up being around ATVs my whole life. Actually, I've never told this part, but before I had my major accident, a friend of mine ran over my foot when I was in 5th grade and broke my foot on an ATV. And that should have been my first warning sign to stay off of them. But I didn't. And so my family had an ATV. And one day I went for a ride on July 5th, 1998, only day I didn't put a helmet on. And sure enough, I crashed face first. And when I say face first, I face planted into a telephone pole, left behind some teeth, lost a bunch of teeth, broke everything in my face from my eyebrows down, had a traumatic brain injury, and ended up in a coma for a few days. Had a bunch of surgeries while I was in the hospital and had my jaw wired shut for about 8 weeks. And they wired my jaw shut with all of the broken, dislodged teeth that I had. And while they needed to do that for stability's sake, it also was really hard, obviously, for me for those next 8 weeks because I couldn't eat anything. And so I survived off of ice cream, pudding, boxed mashed potatoes, and Jell-O, which I see you cringing and I cringe just thinking about that. I'm like, why weren't we smart enough to like get some nutrition in there? But I think we were just trying to survive at that point. And so obviously the broken teeth started to decay and to rot. I started to get lots of dental infections, lots of systemic inflammation, became very malnourished. So liver enzymes spiked, kidneys started shutting down. And so I learned at a very young age just how much your oral health affects your systemic health. And then I had to go through high school without having, I was missing 2 front teeth. So I had to wear flippers, which are little retainers with teeth on them, to school. And I often would forget the flippers and I'd have to take them out for lunch. And it was just a humiliating experience. And so I remember when my dentist was able to put in my implant crowns my senior year before graduation. I mean, it was like a light bulb went off. I knew, you know, this is what I want to do for people. It's life-changing. So that got me into dentistry.
And why you recommend helmets.
And why you should always wear helmets. Yeah. You know, I'm lucky I'm not brain dead. They, you know, the doctors kept telling my parents, when she wakes up, we don't know what we're going to get. Because, I mean, anyone going face first into a telephone pole at 30 miles an hour, you know, she might not be the same. They were expecting me to have some brain damage, which a lot of people would argue I do. But I think I turned out okay. Yeah.
I think so as well. And again, this life-changing experience, this opportunity changed your trajectory, and you became a dentist. And now, can you share your history of fertility and then the connection to fertility and oral health?
Sure. So, you know, you mentioned my career. I had a very successful, I call it first career because I'm working on my second right now. So I had a very successful first career, and I was working all the time, probably stressed out to the max. And during that time was when I decided to try and have a family, which is not always the best time to try and conceive. And I was able to get pregnant naturally about 4 months after I started trying, which was great. But I did that a couple times and I was miscarrying the pregnancies. And so I decided to go in and get some tests done. And, you know, all they tell you when you're mid-30s is now you're geriatric and your eggs are fossilized and, you know, you're all dried up and you're probably never going to be able to have a kid.
But that's a myth.
It's totally a myth.
Not a switch. Your eggs don't expire at age 35, but there is a decline. But just for our listeners, there is no switch. It doesn't turn off. But that's what you got. That was the message you got.
Yeah. And it was very much like, this is kind of your only option is to go down the fertility route, but you have to wait a year because my diagnosis was unexplained infertility. And so in the US, they always say, unless there's something medically wrong that explains why you're infertile, you have to try for a year before you can go into fertility treatment.
That's that definition. So if you're under 35, they want you to wait a year of trying. If you're over 35, it's 6 months now is what they usually say. Unless you have a known diagnosis, you don't ovulate, you know you have endometriosis or PCOS. But I know we're going to get into it. There's this whole preconception. So, you know, there's things you can do that you're going to share to optimize your fertility while you're waiting.
Totally.
I just want to share with the audience because I'm like, when do I go get tested?
Yeah.
So you were trying for a year, you were getting pregnant and you were miscarrying.
And so I would have tests to figure out, you know, why I was miscarrying. And the only thing that came back was that there was chromosome abnormalities in the embryos, which was good to know that that's why I was miscarrying. But there was nothing physically wrong with me or my husband that would cause a miscarriage. And so, you know, waiting a year when you've already been trying to get pregnant, you've miscarried is like the hardest thing for a woman to do. So I did that. And then I started going in and getting, you know, checked out by reproductive endocrinologists. And they said IUI was probably not a good option for me just because we know that, you know, the reason I'd miscarried in the past was due to chromosome abnormalities. So therefore, we needed to do IVF and test the embryos to make sure that the chromosomes were good before a transplant. And so I went down that route. And you know, being a dentist, I've known for a long time that the mouth affects the rest of the body because I had that experience. But what I was really surprised about in my fertility journey was that the doctors never spoke about any alternative methods that I could do to try and optimize my health, reduce my systemic inflammation, and make sure that I was the healthiest vessel to receive this transplant. And, you know, being a busy career person at the time, you know, and being a clinician myself, I was just trusting what the best reproductive endocrinologists in the States were telling me to do. So I had gotten into microbiome testing around the same time. Well, a couple of years earlier, actually, 2014 is when I started microbiome testing. And this was around 2016, 2017 that I started.
Is this the gut or oral microbiome testing?
Oral. Yeah. So I started looking into oral microbiome testing and just seeing if it could help patients. And what ended up happening was, by chance, I had a couple referred to my practice by their OBGYN, and it was an empty referral. She had no idea that I was doing this microbiome testing. The OBGYN was treating this young couple, and they were having difficulty conceiving. And she said, well, nothing's wrong with you, but maybe go see your dentist. Now, that's the first time in my 13 and a half years of practice that any OBGYN or physician for that matter, has really referred anyone to the dentist to see if there was an underlying cause. And when she came in, immediately I could recognize that she had an infection, so did her husband. But I wanted to know what bacteria were specifically causing that infection. So we did the microbiome testing. Sure enough, her and her husband had sky high levels of two of the bacteria that affect fertility, conception, carrying the baby to term, and then maternal health outcomes. And so we treated.
Can we unpack that for a second? Because I don't want to pass over that. So there is research, and in through your clinical practice, there are bacteria in the mouth that can lead to what has been called unexplained infertility, that can lead to miscarriage, and also can lead to poor pregnancy outcomes, like even stillbirths.
Absolutely. So the oral microbiome, and I'm sure we'll get into all this, it affects fertility in so many ways. One is it affects sperm count, motility, and morphology. It affects the man's ability to get an erection. It affects the ability to ovulate. It affects implantation. It affects miscarriage, stillbirth, preterm labor, and maternal health outcomes. So all along the way.
And this is why I wanted to have this conversation, and so happy that you wrote the book Saved by the Mouth, and you have a chapter on fertility there, because maybe some of the people like yourself, and again, please continue your story, that have been diagnosed with unexplained infertility or told they need to do donor egg or IVF, it may be just an issue that's starting in the mouth that's gone systemic.
Totally, totally. It's an infection, right? So anyway, I treated that couple, and you have to treat both parties. And
Say that again, because we usually only see the women.
Yes. So everyone, you know, always thinks that infertility is usually caused by the woman, right? And it's not. We know all infertility cases are 50-50, half men, half women. So, and besides that, even if it was the woman that had the infection, you know, obviously we're swapping spit, we're being intimate. So we're transferring all the bacteria from one person to another on a constant basis. So we have to make sure that both parties are clean. So I treated the couple, and they were able to get pregnant a few months later. And, you know, I can't say cause and effect, but I do know that her pregnancy was much healthier. The baby was much healthier, and she was much healthier because of the treatment.
And back to your personal journey, how many IVF cycles did you do, and what intervention did you end up doing for yourself, and how did it all turn out for you?
Yeah, so I ended up doing 6 rounds of IVF. I saw multiple different renowned reproductive endocrinologists. Looking back, I wish I would have gone the more holistic route. And this is why I'm really getting into all of this now, because I stuck with very traditional Western medicine. And in the end, we were putting in euploid embryos. I would get pregnant. Euploid means that they are chromosomally healthy. I was getting pregnant, making it to the heartbeat, getting all the way to the final check at 12 weeks, and the heartbeat would stop. And so I started miscarrying euploid embryos.
Wow. And then And you made it like past 8 weeks. So that's,
yes.
that must have been very challenging.
Putting very back challenging
normal embryos.
And then when I miscarried, we'd run a gamut of tests to figure out why that happened and couldn't figure out what it was. And then I got pregnant naturally and miscarried after the heartbeat, 12 weeks. And I had a biopsy just to see what it was. And it was a euploid embryo. So I had one embryo left and I didn't want to chance anything. So I went the surrogate route. And so I have a son and he turns 1 next week.
Ah, congratulations.
Thank you.
One. Okay. So a newbie.
A newbie. Yeah. Just had him last year.
And when you said you did 6 cycles, was it 6 retrievals or how many retrievals and transfers?
So I did 4 retrievals.
Okay.
2, I got 0 euploid embryos.
Okay.
And then I think, 6 transfers.
6 transfers. So.
Yeah.
And then now from what you've been through, so and what you're doing, what you saw in practice, I'm curious then, so because our listeners are like, okay, I have euploid embryos not implanting, or I'm getting pregnant and miscarrying. People might have had stillborns. Let's dive into the oral health. And you mentioned the holistic approach and systemic. So what are you seeing then that's starting in the mouth and is impacting the body and why?
Yeah. So what we know from the science is that the bacteria in our mouth do not stay in our mouth. And what happens is they will burrow underneath the gum tissue, start eliciting a localized inflammatory response that causes the gum tissue to start to break down. Our gums are supposed to act like our skin. It's supposed to be like a barrier to keep what's in our mouth out of our body. Sure, we swallow 80 trillion bacteria a day, but most of those bacteria are going to be killed in the stomach and in the small intestine. But the bacteria that harm us are the ones that we call them anaerobes, the ones that survive without oxygen. They go through our gum tissue into our bloodstream and circulate throughout the body. So if someone has bleeding gums, that means that their gums are leaking. I call them leaky gums, just like leaky gut. And that means that their gums are perforated and the bacteria is getting into the body. And where the bacteria goes, you know, I don't really know the answer as to you know, why it goes to the heart in some people or the brain. But what we do know is it does. And one of the places that it loves to go is the female and male reproductive systems.
And so with the female, you're seeing that is it impacting egg quality? Is it impacting uterine receptivity then? And do we have data on that?
Yeah. So what we know is there's really three bacteria that we get, or four bacteria that we get really concerned with when it comes to the oral microbiome and damaging fertility. The main one is FN, Fusobacterium nucleatum. 95% of the population have this bacteria, and it's not necessarily harmful unless it's kind of paired up with other bacteria, and then it starts, or if it's in really high levels, then we know that it's not good for us. And I call FN kind of like the Uber of the body, because it's really good at burrowing through the gum tissue, putting other bacteria on its back and kind of circulating throughout the body. And it has, you know, proteins that bind to cells and to membranes and can bring things across with it. And one of the places that it's really good at crossing is into the uterus. And so FN is directly tied to stillbirths. We know that when stillbirths were born and they were testing them, they had high levels of FN in them, which is super scary. FN also is responsible for premature rupture of the amniotic membranes. Or not responsible, but correlated with premature rupture of the amniotic membranes, leading to preterm birth and low birth weight. So FN is a scary guy.
And you, as you mentioned, that's one out of four. So I'm curious the other three. But that one is, you're going to find it, but it has to be paired often with something else to make it a problem?
It needs to be at low levels. And we need to make sure that the other three bacteria aren't present. So FN, when I talk about FN, I tell patients, think of FN as being associated with adverse pregnancy outcomes. So you're already pregnant, but now your pregnancy is going to, you're going to have complications and or miscarriage, stillbirth, preterm birth because of FN.
What are some of those complications that you can get in your pregnancy?
So mainly the miscarriage and the stillbirth and the preterm birth weight. Now, if we throw PG into the mix, so that's kind of FN's partner in crime. Okay. Porphyromonas gingivalis, that's the other really, really nasty one. FN and PG together just wreak havoc all over the body. They damage the heart and the brain also. But for fertility, PG is implicated more in maternal health complications. It's implicated more in male sperm quality, motility, morphology, and the woman's ability to ovulate and implant. So PG is messes with ability to get pregnant and health issues of the mom while she's carrying. FN is more associated with adverse pregnancy outcomes.
Okay. And the PG also male factor. So there's that, it takes two to tangle. And regardless, you want to assess and treat both because you're constantly cross-contaminating each other.
Yeah. So PG actually disrupts arginine production.
Okay, yeah.
And arginine is really critical in nitric oxide formation. And so that's why we need nitric oxide, because nitric oxide is a very potent vasodilator. And so that's why PG is really associated with heart issues, because if we're not getting that vasodilation, we're going to get things like hypertension. But it's important in men because that's how they end up getting erections. So if we have reduced arginine production, reduced nitric oxide, that's why gum disease is related to erectile dysfunction. Everyone always asks me how that's correlated.
I actually want to jump on that and do a mini tangent. It's not a true tangent, but I once a reproductive urologist that we have on our podcast as well, Paul Turek, I heard him once say, you know, in men, what's good for the heart is good for the penis. There's a relationship, which is why in a workup, if somebody has erectile dysfunction, they look at cardiovascular risk issues because they usually go hand in hand. And then so many of the supplements like CoQ10 is really good for the heart, but it's also good for motility, right? Mm-hmm. And then you brought up nitric oxide. In our practice, we like to use, we talked off camera, the low-level laser therapy. And one of the, with that is it creates a, an increase in nitric oxide. When it does, when you do the treatment, it dislodges the nitric oxide molecule and you get a vasodilation. So we use it for both men and women. And then this ties into your oral health, is that nose breathing increases nitric oxide versus mouth breathing.
Yep. And that's why we know a lot of patients who have sleep apnea. Sleep apnea is directly related to heart attacks and strokes and heart issues. We also know that men who have sleep apnea oftentimes will have erectile dysfunction too. So it's all related.
And so we can teach them about nose breathing and then supplements to help with nitric oxide. But hey, why not clean up the oral health? Because it's the, I think you said that it's the PG is the one that's the culprit for that one.
Yep. And when we're mouth breathing, you know, mouth breathing causes the pH in the mouth to drop, to become more acidic. It causes the mouth to dry out. When we have a dry mouth, bacteria are more prone to sticking to the teeth and forming these plaque biofilms, which is full of the bacteria that we don't want that harm our body. So nasal breathing is really important for a healthy oral microbiome, and it helps with nitric oxide. So it's all related.
And if you do nasal breathing, especially during the day, if your lips are closed, you'll talk less. So you'll be a better listener. So double whammy.
Yeah.
Do you ever recommend sleep tape then for people?
All the time.
You do, eh? Yeah.
All the time. I was just on a podcast yesterday talking about that. You know, if anyone, I tell people everyone should do a sleep study. You know, if you snore, you absolutely need to do a sleep study. What we know is in the, I think it's a US statistic, but at least 70 to 75% of all patients who have sleep apnea or sleep disorder breathing are undiagnosed. That's massive. And that's so scary because untreated sleep apnea is fatal. It's just a matter of time. And so if you snore or grind your teeth, grinding your teeth is a direct symptom of sleep apnea. Or if you have severe acid reflux, or if you're on two or more high blood pressure medications, or if you have diabetes, those are all red flags that you may have an airway issue. So I always recommend people to get tested for sleep apnea. And now they do really easy home sleep tests. You don't even have to go into the doctor's office, do it at home in your own bed. And then a sleep disorder or a sleep physician will read the results and give you the diagnosis. And there's all sorts of treatments these days. You don't have to do just a CPAP. But if you can correct that, a lot of things will become more manageable and you'll prevent a lot more disease. But once you have that diagnosis and you know you don't have sleep apnea, then yes, mouth tape is amazing. And a lot of people will tell me, and I'm sure you hear this too, they'll say, well, I can't breathe through my nose, so there's no way I can tape my mouth shut. So what I tell them to do is, like you said, during the day, start taping it shut or breathing with it, your mouth closed, because you got to start to filter the air through your nose, through the cilia and the turbinates to clean the air. And then a lot of the congestion will start to clear up.
Yeah, that's true. It will clear up if you do it that way. Have you read the book, Katie, called Breath by James Nestor?
Yeah, that's what got me into all this. And I'm a bit embarrassed about this, but I heard about the book through a patient because I was talking to his wife, I think I think you may have an airway issue. And he said, well, have you heard about this book by James Nestor called Breath? And I was like, shameful. I was like, no, I haven't. And so I got it, and it's been amazing.
Because that nose breathing, documents how it changes the shape of the jaw and the teeth. So, I mean, so what you're sharing about oral health, how much that impact, and he talks about systemic as well. So let's get back to you, though, because when in your book, Saved by the Mouth, you talk about actually, when you mention diabetes, I think you mentioned that the oral health could impact your risk of gestational diabetes and just the systemic inflammation, which we talk about in my practice in Vancouver at AccuBalance and on our podcast, how that, the way we phrase it is chronic systemic inflammation leads to accelerated biological aging, which leads to all these chronic diseases, right? Mm-hmm. Including premature infertility. And so if you can address the chronic systemic inflammation, then there's potential to slow down this accelerated biological aging or even reverse the biological aging. Has this been your experience then? Because it sounds like you're getting to a lot often the root cause, because we're right now testing in our practice. We'll do the gut microbiome. We'll do some genetic testing. I think you and I share, I'm a poor methylator, so I'm good at making inflammation, the IL-6 gene. I got to take care of my diet and lifestyle because I got those gene cards.
Same.
But I think from reading your book, which I just finished recently, and now we're having our podcast interview, I want to know more about the bacteria that you're looking for. And then I want to know for our patients, how can they get tested? And then for me locally, if we can't order, because we have naturopathic doctors in our practice, if we can't order these oral salivary tests to test these, because I don't know how easy it is, the gut microbiome, we have access to those. That's easy for us. And the genetic testing is easy for us. Then how do we, do you offer some training or whatever so we can get our local biological dentists to offer this so our patients have a place to go during the preconception or even when they're pregnant?
Yeah. So I'll start with your point about systemic inflammation. So the root cause of 95% of diseases, as you know, is inflammation. A lot of people thought it was genetic. And so, you know, we did the genome project, spent trillions of dollars probably trying to sequence the genome. And what we know is like genes are important, but they have to be switched on or turned off in a certain way to cause disease. And a lot of times that trigger, sure, there's carcinogens, but most of the time it's going to be inflammation. So if we can figure out where the source of inflammation is coming from and get rid of it, then we know we're less likely to get disease, or we can better manage the disease that we have. And my whole point of talking about this is a major source of inflammation that a lot of people don't know about is from the mouth, whether it's from our gums or from tooth abscesses or cavities or anything like that, or sleep disordered breathing. So it's a source of inflammation that we need to be looking at. When I do the microbiome test, it depends on what test that I use. There's several on the market, and I'll talk about a few of them. The main one that I use, I like it because it tests for the IL-6 gene. And that to me is really important, because if I know that a patient has a genetic mutation that predisposes them to inflammation, I'm going to treat their bacteria much more aggressively and more frequently than someone who doesn't have that mutation, because I know that any amount of bacteria in their mouth is going to cause an exacerbated response in their body. So for instance, I had a patient yesterday, I was reviewing her saliva test with her. And she had even AA, which is like the scariest bacteria of them all. It's only present in a very small percentage of the population. It runs in families, but it's really horrible bacteria that causes you to lose all your teeth. But she had IL-6. She did not have an IL-6 mutation. And so her clinical presentation has actually been pretty decent, to be honest. Now, if that was in me, I'd probably have all my teeth out by now. And so that inflammatory marker is really important. So the test I use is called oral DNA by Access Genetics. I'm not paid by them or anything like that. I've used it for years. That's the one I started with. And it screens for 11 different bacteria. And the main ones that I'm looking for are AA, TF, TD, PG, FN, EC. Those are all implicated mainly in infertility. So I look for those the most. But there's several others on the market. I do know, because I checked for another podcast that I was on, oral DNA does ship to Canada. Okay. So what you can do, and I should be sponsored by them, but I'm not. You can actually, you as a provider can go to their website, oraldna.com, and sign up as a provider. And then you can give the test to your patients.
Yeah, because we're big fans of leaving no stone unturned. And my background, totally. Before I did Chinese medicine and clinical hypnotherapy, I'm CPA, so an auditor. So I like to dig, right?
Yeah.
And so when patients come in, and I think this is where we really are similar, is you really like to get to the root cause. And so to me, looking for that underlying cause or leaving no stone unturned, there are the big guns of treatment like IVF, but that's today's dollars, it's close to a $20,000 process. And so maybe we can not need to do IVF, or if you do one time, right? Because they say it's an average three cycles to get three IVFs to get a baby on average. So that gets up there in money. So, and we want a healthy baby. And that's something you talk about a lot as well, in that holistic approach. So we do some genetic testing. We can look for inflammatory triggers and methylation issues. We can look at your mitochondrial dysfunction, lots of things. This is new. So I haven't met with my team yet because literally we just connected recently. I read your book. Here we are. My plan is to look into this so we can have this available so we can help treat many of these people that are told unexplained. And again, like you, our goal is healthy baby, which comes from healthy egg plus healthy sperm plus healthy uterine environment. And I'm learning that we can start addressing the gut issues. And we can be giving lots of supplements and things to improve egg and sperm quality, But if we haven't dealt with the bacteria in the mouth, we're just going to, we'll see some good things, and then all of a sudden they're back to not good. So we do have to get to that root cause. And this is something, I think this is your message, right? That the mm-hmm. mouth is important.
Well, and we got to think, you know, how does the gut microbiome get established? Because when babies are born, they're pretty much sterile, not all the way, but pretty much. And they first get introduced to the microbiome through the vaginal canal, the birthing canal. And then the mouth is ideally sterile or close to being sterile. And everything that we have in our mouth has been acquired over our lifetime. And it starts with, you know, breastfeeding. It starts with our caregivers. You know, I'm constantly kissing my son. Like, I can't get enough of that little boy. So I'm constantly transferring my microbiome to him. When you're eating, you're sharing spoons. Anything around your child's environment is where they're getting their microbiome from. And then that microbiome is seeding your gut microbiome. So as you mentioned, you may be able to take all these supplements, but if you have an infection up at the beginning of the digestive system, you can't have a healthy gut without a healthy mouth. And then to your point about not leaving any stone unturned, you know, I think looking back at my journey, I have a lot of regrets. I don't think I treated my mind or body very kindly during that process because I was working so much and I was really focused on my career, but I didn't turn over all the stones and I didn't dig deeper. And I took the information that I was given at face value. And I spent $250,000 on IVF. That's not even the surrogate route, which is like a whole nother expense. And I wish I would have been kinder to myself. I wish I would have given myself that respect of turning over all the stones. That's why I'm so passionate about this.
And you can tell in your writing and when we're chatting, and you talked about the amount of money you spent on to the IVFs. Some people think, well, you know, this holistic, is it affordable? It's not affordable for everybody. Relative, though, it's a fraction of what the IVF cycles would cost. And our goal still is healthy baby. So you can do the IVF route as you've experienced and other people experienced and not get the baby or pregnancy complications. So if somebody had tested and they see that they got the oral health issues, what is the treatment approach? And can you talk about the holistic? So love to know the dental aspect of it. And then are there other things that you are recommending as part of the holistic approach to treat the root cause and optimize your fertility and pregnancy outcome?
Absolutely. So the really important thing, and I was just talking to another patient who had found me on Instagram. I was talking to her about this because she said that she asked her biologic dentist for a saliva test because she's pregnant. And the biologic dentist said, we don't need to do a saliva test because the treatment's the same. And I cringed at that because we know from the science that that is not true. And that was a biologic dentist saying that. So what we know is when we get that report back, it will tell us the bacteria that are present and how they're best treated. So of the 11 pathogens that I routinely test for, 6 out of the 11 are resistant to mechanical cleaning. And so the blanket treatment for gum infection is a deep cleaning or other, it's called scaling and root planing, otherwise known as a deep cleaning. That's where the dentist will give you some local anesthetic and clean above and below your gum line. Sometimes they break it into 2 appointments just to make it more comfortable for the patient. But we know that only gets about half of the bacteria. So we need to do other things to treat the other bacteria. And by the way, the bacteria that are non-responsive to that cleaning are the ones that are implicated in infertility. So some of the bacteria are tissue invasive, meaning they love to attach and live in our gum tissue. So for those, I like to use diode lasers to eradicate those bacteria. And then other bacteria, I'll use some antimicrobial irrigation. I love ozone. That is super effective at reducing the biofilm. And then what's really important is that we make sure that the patient is adequately supplemented afterwards. So sometimes even the infection can be so severe, like in my patient yesterday, that we have to give them systemic antibiotics, which I don't like doing. But research has shown time and time again, when it gets that severe, sometimes you have to wipe it out and rebuild it. Yeah. I mean, everyone says, oh, I don't want to take antibiotics. And I get that. But like, I've done it both ways. I went through a season in my practice where I was like, no antibiotics ever unless, you know, someone was swollen. And then I've done it the other way. And I can never get the patients fully controlled when this infection is that bad without antibiotics.
And you've shared that you don't treat one size fits all. So it's not everybody has to have that level of antibiotics, but there are going to be people that they need that kind of treatment.
Totally. And so once we do all that, even if we don't use antibiotics and we're doing all this other stuff, we still need to rebuild the microbiome because we've kind of gone in and disrupted everything. So I always make sure that patients have adequate pre and probiotics. And then I'm a big supplement fan. I've been on supplements since I was in my early 20s. And so vitamin A is really good for oral health. Vitamin C is critical for wound healing. So anyone getting, and it's really good for collagen formation. So anyone getting a deep cleaning and we're going in and disrupting all that, the collagen fibers, they definitely need vitamin C. Vitamin D3 paired with K2 is critical. Magnesium is critical. So those are just a few. That fish oil is really good for anti-inflammatory.
All right. I got to repeat some of these and talk about it. Cause in our practice, I have my faves, you know. Again, if you have PCOS, you have endometriosis, depending on what's going on, we add or take away. But you mentioned, so vitamin A and vitamin C, cause we often do nutritional IV drips,
yes,
with our patients, not just supplementation. Like you, we actually compound our own D with K2.
Awesome.
The right ratio, so we can go a high dose, because you can get a wrong ratio with D and K2. So our naturopaths formulated so we can dose it up, or we can do, if the D is so deficient, we can do intramuscular injection. But we have our pills in 2,500 IU units with K2. Fish oil we like. I'm going to throw a few other because you didn't mention, but I'm just curious to see if because of the inflammation, there's two I like. I'm a fan of N-acetylcysteine.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've ever used that or are familiar with that one.
So I alternate between N-acetylcysteine and alpha lipoic acid for myself because it's a good detox. And being a dentist, I'm filled, you know, I'm taking out mercury fillings all the time. N-acetylcysteine is a precursor to glutathione, which I love. So for me, I alternate between the two, but I don't typically recommend it unless someone really needs to detox.
And I also like, we like it because in NAC, it's a gentle detox for the liver. And it's used at high dose for Tylenol poisoning, but in a low dose, it's a nice gentle detox. It's been shown to prove IVF success, reduce miscarriage. And it's been in research for endometriosis and PCOS. So that's why
we need to write that down. I did not know that.
Usually, I think the Italian study, I think it was either 1,500 to 1,800 milligrams, where they would do like 5 days on, then a few days off. So we tend to use 1,800 milligrams for that. I also like the myo-inositol because, in research, has been shown to improve egg quality, but because it helps with the insulin sensitivity and helps with inflammation with the blood sugars, I just like it as another way to help systemic inflammation.
I was on that during when I was undergoing IVF stuff. And then I also took PQQ10.
We pair that with our CoQ10. So our CoQ10 has PQQ in it.
Yeah.
And the glutathione we do, when we do our nutritional IVs, we'll inject it into, not into the bag, but into the tube. So you get the, we're not convinced that the glutathione pills can get absorbed because when it goes through the gut. So there's some brands out there saying they can. So we do have access to those. We found that the intramuscular wasn't doing what we thought it would do, glutathione. So we usually use the glutathione with the as part of our nutritional IV. And awesome. As you said, NAC is a precursor to that. So anyways, I just wanted to, our listeners love to know about supplements. So just curious. So some similarities there.
Yeah, I got on PQQ because it's really good for mitochondrial health. And we are, mitochondria is like the longest living microbe, right, on the planet. Well, bacteria ingested my mitochondria, I think, back in the day, right? So I'm like obsessed with making sure my mitochondria are healthy and mitochondria are passed down from your mom. So I take PQQ for that. And then CoQ10 is really good for your heart, and heart stuff runs in my family. So
Good for egg quality. And for our listeners, our CoQ10 that we carry is with PQQ. So it's combined, so we don't have to do it separately.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about mitochondria. And for those that are seeing the video, her little guy has joined us, Roman as well. And reminding you guys, this is Katie's long journey of multiple IVFs and doing stuff to create this little miracle. So we're glad to have Roman with us as we do this, and hope others have this opportunity as well while we're having the podcast. So we were talking about mitochondrial health, and we're talking about the supplements. So CoQ10, alpha lipoic acid, and PQQ. I want to remind our listeners that there's things that can negatively impact our mitochondria. So that's why, and you like your, Katie, your holistic approach, like your diet and lifestyle can impact your mitochondria negatively. So we want to preserve that. Many people don't know, but there has been studies in rats using Chinese herbs, the yang tonics and qi tonics in particular, that improve ATP production. So that's been shown. And then I've been a big proponent of using low-level laser therapy in the red and infrared because it's been shown to improve mitochondrial function and its relationship for causing a little zap of nitric oxide release as well. So that's lots really of opportunities cool. with that.
How do you use the laser? Do you just shine it on the body or?
Yeah. So in our practice, and I don't want to go too much on a tangent on it, but the laser, I combined from what I learned through the Oshiro technique. He's the one that started in the 90s. So he will treat certain features on the neck. So he's basically getting the carotid. So he's systemically treating the blood. The satellite ganglia and the vagus nerve is what he's done. And that engages the parasympathetic nervous system, increases blood flow. And then in Denmark, they were using it with good results. And they were putting it over the abdomen, thinking they're maybe getting the photons to the ovaries. That's debatable to reach that level, to get to that depth with red and infrared. But I think, and here's something that will connect, their device that we have one in our practice as well, the Giga laser, and how we've used our other lasers, it covered the gut. So I think we know, by the way, photobiomodulation can impact the gut microbiome in a good way. So I think these women had an improvement in fertility because they were systemically getting the photons into the blood, so it helps with inflammation, but they were also treating the microbiome.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I'm sure it exists in dental in some way, shape, or form. I haven't heard of it, so I'm going to look into that.
Yeah, and the dentists I saw here, when I had to have some work done, and they would do PRP and low-level laser therapy to help with the healing. And we talked once off camera, but I'm curious. I've been looking now for devices on Amazon that have the red and blue light. The blue light in the 400 zones area, that has been shown to be antibacterial. Mm-hmm. So it's something that I'd be curious. You got to do like the deep clean and sometimes the antibiotics, but this be another preventative and just support. Like people want to be involved in their healing, something that you can do because the red will help with inflammation, improve mitochondrial function and blood flow, and the blue will kill bad bacteria.
Yeah, and you hit a really good point there, is it's really important, and patients will always ask me, well, can I just do this? I get a lot of questions about the laser therapy. Can I just do this at home? Will this treat it? Unfortunately, the answer is no. Once the infection is there, you have to see a professional to treat it. Then once we get you treated, all of these other modalities are awesome for you to maintain it and to prevent it from coming back. But it's like, you know, once you have the cancer, right, you got to treat the cancer. Yeah. I'm not saying microbiome is cancer because it's not, but you get my point. Like you can't, it's too far. You can't use, you know, homeopathic or home remedies to treat it at that point, but you absolutely can use them to maintain health.
So a couple more questions, because I'm so excited to have you, a dentist, here. So we're learning that your oral health can impact your overall health. And we didn't really talk about that, but yours experience that the inflammation, which leads to so many diseases, we didn't give like specific things, but it can affect cardiovascular, brain health, and now we know fertility. You shared that there's some testing that can be done. Here's a question I have. Myth or fact? I've often heard that, oh, well, you're pregnant now, so don't do any dental work.
Oh, that makes me cringe. I want to cry. Total myth. Total myth. I mean, that was debunked in the 90s. There's a really good paper in the 90s that says dental care during pregnancy is safe and necessary. The American or the ADA, American Dental Association, even says it's safe during pregnancy. So again, what we know is bacteria in the mouth don't stay in the mouth. So if you have a gum infection, we know that even when you're pregnant, pregnancy, because of the hormones that are released by the placenta, that causes a lot of vasodilation and a lot of inflammation and edema, leak, you know, swollenness anyway. So you become even leakier when you're pregnant. So anything that you have in your mouth gets worse. That's why we know that there's a condition called pregnancy gingivitis. When people are pregnant, oftentimes they're one of the first signs, for me even, one of the first signs that I was pregnant, even before a pregnancy test, was my gums would be sensitive. And so we know this because of the hormones in the science. So we got to be even more diligent when we're pregnant about our dental care. And so no, you should not be going and getting veneers and bleaching, but you absolutely should be going and getting your gums cleaned and taken care of, because whether you do that or not, the bacteria are going to the female reproductive system. So it absolutely needs to be taken care of. And then the other thing is, you know, when women are pregnant, oftentimes they're not feeling well, they're vomiting a lot. They're oftentimes vomiting. All that acid is causing the teeth to decay. And they're eating stuff that isn't always optimal because of cravings, right? Lots of sugar, carbohydrates, things like that. And so pregnant women oftentimes will have tons of cavities. And if a small cavity happens when you're pregnant and it doesn't get taken care of because of all these issues, it could progress to the nerve very quickly. And now you have an abscess, which is horrific for the baby.
All right. More rapid fire to our Dr. Katie here, the dentist. Fluoride or not fluoride?
Fluoride or no fluoride? Yeah. I think that there's a time and place for fluoride for sure. But however, I think for the vast majority of the population, there's better alternatives to fluoride. There's nanohydroxyapatite, which was invented and used by NASA for several years. And if it's good enough for NASA, it's good enough for me. But it actually is putting the minerals back into the teeth. Arginine is fantastic to take if someone has a high cavity risk. Arginine inhibits the bacterial growth that causes cavities in the mouth. So patients can use that. You know, when I tell people that fluoride has a time and place, I've had some patients that come in and say, you know, moms will come in and say, I've eliminated all fluoride in my house. We don't do any fluoride, no fluorinated water, none of that. But then they're still giving their kids Capri Suns and Cheetos, and they suck on candy and they're not brushing their teeth. And then their kids have rampant decay all over their mouth. That rampant decay is far more dangerous for their child or for themselves than if they were just to use a little bit of topical fluoride. So if I do need to use fluoride, I'll apply it myself in the office. That way I know it's going on the teeth. And I only do it, yeah, in those cases where like people are not following what they need to be following to stay healthy on their own.
And then toothpaste, what type? Because I read ages ago that they added the foaming agent so people felt like something was happening because people weren't brushing their teeth because it just didn't feel fun in the mouth. And with a little tingle and foam.
Isn't that crazy?
I heard that may not be so beneficial. So do you recommend the minty and alcohol mouthwashes, or is there a better way to do this as well?
Yeah. So that agent you're talking about is SLS, sodium lauryl sulfate is what they added. So I'm glad you brought this up. It's really important that people use a very gentle toothpaste and mouthwash. It doesn't need to be full of chemicals. It should not be killing 99.9% of bacteria in the mouth. That's another thing that, you know, in America, Americans love, you know, sterilizing everything. That's actually not good for the microbiome. So I tell them to stay away from anything that has alcohol in it, anything that has a chemical in it that you don't know what it is or what it does, you probably shouldn't be putting it in your mouth. So there's lots of cleaner brands out there. Tom's is really good. Revitin is good. Primal Health is really good. Biocidin is great. Boca, all those brands are really great.
And then as we get close to wrapping up, the holistic approach, oftentimes we'll recommend 100 days to peak fertility because that's the time period for follicular genesis. And interesting enough, when I was going through my training, one of my professors said, when we treat gynecology, treat three cycles. And I asked why. And he says, on average, it just takes three full cycles of acupuncture herbs to see the PMS, the painful periods, the clotting to shift. It's neat because now we know follicular genesis is about 100 days. So if you're treating, you get that recruitment period of 100 days that you're impacting the environment in which the egg is maturing.
Oh, that's interesting.
What about your oral health, though? Like if somebody does this, do you recommend, because your holistic approach, is there a timing that you like for this when people are trying to get pregnant? If somebody could time when they're going to try and conceive or go into an IVF, do you recommend get your teeth clean and then do IVF tomorrow? Or do you have a period that you like, what I call preconception or the 100 days to peak fertility?
You know, it's funny. I usually recommend 3 months. And mine was not based on that science whatsoever. It was just based on intuition of knowing that bacteria tend to repopulate about every 90 days. We also know that once we do any kind of dental treatment, we get what's called bacteremia. So the bacteria in the mouth from the dental treatment, cleaning, whatever, is going to go into the bloodstream, and you have to give it time to get out of there. Plus, I always recommend doing a retest for patients. So if I test them and they have an infection and we have to treat it, I always recommend doing a retest about 8 to 10 weeks after treatment to make sure it's gone. So that was really the reason why I said, you know, wait 3 months, is because I wanted to make sure they were clear. But now that I know about follicular genesis, that makes me feel better.
So, and I want to repeat, make sure I heard that. So you will test, you'll do your intervention, and then if they had an IVF, you want them to wait the 90 days, then retest and make sure it hasn't repopulated, and then go into the IVF.
Yeah. Now, if I test someone and they're pretty okay, you know, only a few minor things, I won't recommend a retest. But I would say out of everyone I test, I've maybe had 2 patients that I said didn't really need anything.
And for the
majority, not that many.
Yeah. And for the majority of patients, and just for our listeners again, and Katie, you're perfect because you went through this. It's really hard to hear wait, right?
Yeah.
And you shared like the message you got, you're 35, you know, geriatric, rush. How do you address that when patients are told by the reproductive endocrinologist, you need to do this quickly, but you see what's going on in the mouth? How do you communicate to them so they're open to this? And
well, I think for me being told to wait, there was no reason for me to wait other than someone had made this a policy, a statement, a best practice, whatever it was, right? There was nothing tailored to me specifically telling me to wait. It was just, this is what we do with everyone your age, you know, and everyone with this diagnosis. And so for the patients that I do tell to wait, I tell them, hey, I've been through this. I've done this 6 times and not been successful. I have not gone and turned over every rock that I could have. And what I know is that if you do this now, sure, you can roll the dice and you could get pregnant and you could have a healthy pregnancy and healthy outcomes, or there's a high likelihood you can't. So at the end of the day, it's really up to the patient. You know, if they want to do it, they can do it. But yeah, I tell them, you're spending all of this money. Do you really want to gamble?
On the IVF, there's a lot of money involved. And 100 days in the reproductive world, although chronologically they may be 100 days older if they wait, oftentimes, biologically, they've regained over 100 days.
Ooh, that's a really good point. I'm gonna say
that. On the systemic side, because that's what we've seen. I've seen people where they've had all their embryos, all the embryos come back negative, like abnormal, aneuploid. And then we've worked with them for 6 months, and they lose weight because they're changing their diet and lifestyle.
Wow.
Their skin issues are changing because we're dealing with the inflammation and the gut health. Increase in blood flow, all those things are changing. They're just seeing their body change, their digestion change, their body temperature change. And yeah, they're 6 months older, but biologically they're appearing much younger, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we're aiming for, right?
I love that.
So as we wrap up, I have 2 questions. One is, I don't know if I heard it on another podcast or if I read it in your book, Saved by the Mouth. The hormones, estrogen and progesterone, the synthetic hormones that you often get in the in an IVF treatment, they do a lot of estrogen priming, they'll do progesterone. I think you mentioned that it can impact oral health. Did I hear that from you, or did I hear that elsewhere?
No, you probably heard it elsewhere because it is true, but I have it in the book too. So those hormones definitely increase inflammatory levels in the bloodstream. Progesterone is a dilator also, and so that's why those hormones cause a lot of gingival inflammation. Right. During pregnancy.
So to me, if you've been through IVF cycles, more reason to start testing to see if
totally. And that's, you know, I have so many patients come to me after they have babies and they say, you know, I've never had gum or teeth issues until I had children. You know, the baby sucked all the minerals out of my teeth and now I have gum disease. I hear it all the time and I see it all the time. And it's because these hormones were there during pregnancy. They probably had some bacteria that were there before they got pregnant. They never got treated. Now everything's just exacerbated.
And to reiterate this, the male partner, if it's a couple where it's heterosexual, or they're using the person they're with sperm, let's just get really specific.
Yeah.
You believe that he needs to be tested and involved because it takes 2 to make a baby when you're using somebody's sperm in a relationship.
I mean, I would say whether they're heterosexual or not, because even, you know, let's say you have a homosexual couple, you know, you're still swapping spit, right? So if you have two females, right, that are one's trying to get pregnant, if she does get pregnant and the partner has an infection, she can infect the carrier.
So there's two reasons that both people are involved. So if you're single, you're using a donor sperm, so that's taken care of. If you're in a relationship, whether it's same sex or heterosexual, if it's same sex, you're swapping fluid so you can cross-contaminate each other. So there's a reason to be tested and both treated. And if your partner is the one contributing sperm to the egg to make the embryo, you're shared that these oral microbiomes and inflammatory issues can impact motility, count, morphology.
Totally. You got it.
And when you did your healing journey through your fertility and your mouth, you used functional medicine as part of your journey, correct?
Yeah. And so that, you know, after I did all this and I took a second to pause, you know, obviously my body was wrecked after all of this, because I just kept doing it one cycle after another, like no break in between. You know, I'd miscarry, we'd wait for a period and I'd start the next round, which is horrific when I think about the things that I did to my body. And so, yeah, I did use more functional approach. And that's why in this new clinic that I'm building right now, it's a total health clinic that integrates medicine, functional health, naturopath, dentistry, airway health. I mean, I have a sleep apnea clinic. And then I have a training and education center so I can bring dentists from all over the world to train them on this. So I'm really excited for that.
That was my next question. And because we're going to wrap up, everybody, and how you can connect with Katie and get a copy, know about her book, Saved by the Mouth. So if somebody's interested in this, do you do telehealth sessions so they can have a discussion with you?
So that's what I'm doing right now. I wrote the book and then I had my son. And so I was really planning on spending all my time with him. But then everyone started reaching out to me saying, oh my gosh, I need your help. Will you please treat me? So now I do telehealth for patients. Yeah. And so people will contact me. I'll do a saliva test for them, okay. Go over their results, create a care plan that includes everything from dental treatment to supplementation, all of that. Okay. And then I'll work with their current doctor, dentist, or find them a dentist that will do it for them.
And if we can find, because I know there's some biological dentists in the city, you have a training center, so I can also introduce them to you. So they may want to get more training when we want to make it more specific to fertility and just what you're doing for oral health. Yes.
Yes. So that's the other thing that I do. And it's on my website too, is that I train clinicians on how to incorporate oral systemic health into their practice, whether they're like you and you have a medical practice or if they're dentists.
Oh, good. So Katie, we're going to follow up then, because I'm going to do that with my team, because we want to introduce this into our practice here at AccuBalance in Vancouver. So, because as I mentioned, we like to leave no stone unturned and our goal is healthy baby. And this sounds like it's another avenue to see what could be interfering with getting pregnant or maintaining the pregnancy, and also improve that health of the baby. And Katie has an offer for you guys as well. As I mentioned, her book is called Saved by the Mouth, Be Healthier, Save Money, and Live Longer by Improving Your Oral Health. And again, I have a signed copy. And if you look in our show notes, she has provided a link where you can download the first chapter of Saved by the Mouth for free, so you can get a feel for the book. I've been through it, so I highly recommend it if you have any health issues, and particularly if you're looking to grow your family. And again, just go into the show notes and you'll see a link for that. It's katieleedds.com/saved-by-the-mouth. And again, just go into the show notes. You'll see it there as well.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience too. This is what happens when you have a baby and the nanny calls out and you still got to be a mom and work.
He's been great. He's been a real trooper. So, and you know, he's getting all this information in. So be curious to see how Roman grows up and contributes to the world because of all the podcasts that he's getting to learn and listen about oral health.
Totally.
As he sticks things in his mouth. See, he's working on his microbiome right now.
I know. He's teething. Yep. There's certain things that you can control and other things you can't.
Awesome. Katie, thank you for writing the book. And thank you very much for taking time to share what you know, from a dentist's perspective on oral health in general for our health and your holistic approach and how this could impact your fertility. I really appreciate our time
together. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
If you're looking for support to grow your family, contact AccuBalance Wellness Center. At AccuBalance, they help you reach your peak fertility potential through their integrative approach. using low-level laser therapy, fertility acupuncture, and naturopathic medicine. Download the AccuBalance Fertility Diet and Dr. Brown's video for mastering manifestation and clearing subconscious blocks. Go to AccuBalance.ca, that's A-C-U-Balance.ca.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Conscious Fertility, the show that helps you receive life on purpose. Please take a moment to subscribe to the show and join the community of women and men on their path to peak fertility and choosing to live consciously on purpose. I would love to continue this conversation with you, so please direct message me on Instagram at Lauren Brown Official. That's Instagram, Lauren Brown Official. Or you can visit my websites, laurenbrown.com and accubalance.ca. Until the next episode, stay curious, and for a few moments, bring your awareness to your heart center and breathe.